Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mother's Bob from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from County Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chotti of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcast and join me for the story behind the song.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
Consequence Podcast Network. This is In Defense of Ska. Our mission is to document the ska scene from its traditional roots through until its emergence as a diverse global genre. The influence of ska resonates through your favorite bands and artists in ways you might have missed. I'm your co-host, Adam D. of Omnigon and Asian Man Records band, Link 80. Joining me is your host, Aaron Carnes, renowned author of the book In Defense of Ska, which is currently available in its expanded second edition.
What do you know about the genre called crack rock steady?
I know that there's a lot of bands that claim to be crack rock steady, and they all kind of seem to come from the lineage of Choking Victim and Leftover Crack.
Yeah, I guess that's probably my understanding. I honestly have a limited understanding of crack rock steady as a genre. I know that the term was invented by Leftover Crack, I think, or was it Choking Victim? I don't know. The term came from that band, those bands, and I do know that there's bands that say we're part of the genre. I've always wondered, is it really even a genre?
I mean, I guess it's a subgenre, a sub-subgenre, because I guess it would be close to, you know, ska core or ska punk, but they wanted to delineate it and maybe get rid of the ska word.
This episode, this week, we are going to look at it and see if it is truly a genre, and if it is, what exactly are its defining markers? What makes a band crack rock steady and not just ska core, if you will?
And so who's going to fill us in on this?
Well, we have an expert. His name is Jeff Burke. He is a ska fan, a friend of mine, but he's also someone that I know from the literary world. So we have a connection in that realm. But he knows more about crack rock steady than anyone else I know. So let's have at it.
All right. By the end of this episode, we hope to understand crack rock steady better, and hopefully you will too.
Before we begin today's topic, we have two off-topic questions. We're going to start with those.
Okay.
First topic, first question is, I know you're a fan of Omnigon, Adam's band. So let's hear, tell us your favorite Omnigon song.
Okay, my my favorite Omnigon song is easily Obituary. Tomorrow isn't promised, so live today. Don't let your obituary describe you as ordinary. Let no one tell you how to live your life. And I was actually a little bit late getting on the Omnigon train. That I'd say the first album was out for maybe a year, year and a half before I actually heard it. No reason why, just took me a little bit to catch up to it, and fucking loved it. Adam, I have loved every Omnigon release since, and I have seen you live twice. We have actually met in person twice. Omnigon opened for, was it Mustard Plug, Bucko 9, and there was another band in Portland at Dante's.
More importantly, though, there was an author at that event who read a chapter of his book.
Oh, that's probably that's probably why I'm thinking four, is because Aaron, yeah, of course.
Well, no, the Bandulus played also.
That's who the fourth band was, the Bandulus. And I also saw Omnigon at the, I totally am spacing on the name of the tour now, of at Holocene with We Are the Union, Kill Lincoln, Catbite, and of course Omnigon opening the show, and yeah, that was recorded for the upcoming documentary, and I'm really curious about seeing that come out, because Omnigon closed with Obituary at that show, and Adam, for the very last line of Obituary, you put the microphone into my face and I sang the last line of the song. And because there's a little rhythm change, you saw that I got the rhythm change right. And I saw you give me a little fist pump over like, hey, you actually know the song.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And also, I have tickets for your upcoming show with the Kilograms and Big D in March.
In a couple of weeks. That'll be fun. Well, I'll high five you there. That'll be great.
Hell yeah.
Now, the second question is, I would like you to explain your connection to the book In Defense of Ska, because I don't know that it's well known, but you're actually a pretty instrumental part of me signing to Clash and therefore releasing In Defense of Ska.
Yeah. So, professionally, I've been involved in the publishing industry for well over a decade. I used to run a horror publisher called Deadite Press, and I worked with the publisher Eraserhead Press. And while I was working there, Aaron.
Oh wait, wait! Tell people the books that you've written, the most well known books, and the topic of them.
Oh, also, I've written a few books as well. I've written five books. I'm best known for the book Shatner Quake, which is about the first ever William Shatner convention with William Shatner as a guest of honor. And every character that William Shatner has ever played gets sucked into our reality with the goal of hunting down and killing the real William Shatner. So it's William Shatner versus Captain Kirk, William Shatner versus T.J. Hooker, William Shatner versus Singer Shatner, William Shatner versus everybody. I've been involved in lots of stupid, weird, and obscene stuff. Like the publishing company I worked with, some of our best-selling titles went with by the names of like The Baby Jesus Butt Plug, The Haunted Vagina, Ask Goblins of Auschwitz, The Traveling Dildo Salesman. We had some weird stuff. Well, while I was working there, I don't know how you heard about me, Aaron, so maybe you can enlighten me on that.
Well, I was so Eraserhead Press, I was a fan of, am a fan of. I was aware of you as a writer. I knew you worked there. And we were friends on Facebook for a while, and I knew that you were a ska fan. I knew that Eraserhead and Deadite would not publish my book because you guys didn't do a nonfiction, but you were the only person that I really knew in the publishing industry. So I thought, well, here's a guy that maybe knows some people in the publishing industry who like ska, who might be supportive of my cause. So maybe he might point me in the right direction. And in fact, you did do that. Exactly.
And so Aaron reached out to me and he had said about like that he was had this idea for the ska book, which sounded like a fantastic concept to me. And as Aaron said, obviously, at the publishing company I was working with, we had no place for it. But I happen to know my friend, my friends, Christoph Paul and Lisa Cantanelle. Am I saying her last name right? If I mispronounce anybody's name on this podcast, please forgive me. I always struggle with that. But they were starting a brand new publishing company called Clash Books. And I had already talked to them about doing a short story collection of my own work, which they released, the very ineffective Haunted House. It's very silly horror sci-fi stories. And they were open to pretty much anything. I had already been talking to them about what they were looking for. And they were just kind of like looking for things that nobody else would do, but would sell well. And Aaron had reached out to me. I believe you had sent me, if I recall correctly, there was like an outline and a couple sample chapters.
I sent you my early proposal and yeah, maybe some samples as well. Yeah.
And I could see you could write, and this was going to be a good book. And I contacted Christoph, and I told you, hey, send this to Christoph at Clash Books, and I'm going to tell Clash that I'm sending you their way. And I contacted Christoph. I'm like, hey, there's this book coming in about ska. I know you hate ska. It's always been a running joke between him and I over how much I love ska and how much he hates it. And it's like, I know you hate ska, but actually, I think there's a real audience for this. Nobody else is doing this. I think this is a major opportunity. You should do it. And as time's gone on, it showed that your book, people were waiting for it. The fact that this podcast has lasted so many episodes, the book has been so successful going into its second edition. Like, yeah, people were ready for a book about ska, and no one other than you was doing it.
I mean, there are other books about ska, but I think the angle my focusing on like American ska and also focusing on presenting it in the angle that I did, that I was defending it, and that, yeah.
That is correct. And there has been some other people that have since done some books about American ska. But at the time when you were proposing the idea of In Defense of Ska, there was nobody else that was talking about the modern American scene.
Yeah. And so I didn't know Christoph hated ska until after he accepted my proposal. And I became friends with him on Facebook and I started reading his posts. Like, I can't believe I signed a book about ska. What's wrong with me? Like, stuff like that. I was like, what's going on? Who is this person that just signed me? And then that I just found it amusing pretty quickly. Just like,
he likes nu metal. I don't understand it.
Oh, so that's the other half of your guys' inside joke is he likes nu metal and you hate nu metal.
Yes.
Okay.
Can't stand it at all.
And also, I hear you're publishing a book called In Defense of Nu Metal.
The fun fact, I have seen Papa Roach live.
Yeah, so I have too. Adam, Link 80s played with Papa Roach many, many times. Is that correct? How many times would you say, Adam, you've played?
We played the album release show for Infest, the album with Last Resort on it.
Really?
Yeah, we were pretty tight with them.
Yeah, they were homies back in the day. Yeah. All right. We could go on and on about Papa Roach and Link 80. We'll save that for when we have Jacoby on the episode, on the podcast. But today we're talking about the genre, the subgenre. What we call a subgenre, a sub-subgenre. I'm not even sure. Crack rock steady. What would you call it? Would you call it a subgenre of ska punk, or do you call it its own genre?
I was thinking about that earlier today, and it's like, well, you have ska, which is its own genre. Punk is kind of a subgenre of rock, and ska punk is a subgenre, and yeah, crack rock steady would be a sub-subgenre. It's as niche as it gets in terms of like music. It's kind of like getting into the ultra nerd thing when people make memes of mocking music nerds of all the subgenres. When we're talking about crack rock steady, we're kind of getting into that meme level territory. However, I do think it's its own specific thing, and it is actually my absolute favorite musical form, period.
Before we get into specific bands, Can you define the musical and aesthetic elements that you say would define this genre?
Yes, I'd say it is anarcho-punk. So, and when I say anarcho-punk, think like the original UK, like Crass Records, anarcho-punk combined with ska. And I gotta give a shout out to another great ska podcast, Checkered Past, that did a Crack Rock Steady episode, and they had a statement on it that I thought was very insightful, that a Crack Rock Steady's band's knowledge of ska ends with Operation Ivy. And it's not that they only listen to Operation Ivy, but the influences are primarily Operation Ivy and Before. That you get a lot of the Crack Rock Steady bands, I feel, are way more influenced by a, when they play do the ska parts, are way more influenced by a lot of older styles of ska than a lot of, shall we say, for contrast, like a lot of New Time Records bands, which I'd say are very much influenced by, their ska styles are very influenced by bands in the 90s third wave. Mm-hmm. And then aesthetically, and aesthetics are a gigantic part of the crack rock scene to such a degree that it's like required to be a crack rock band. It basically boils down to kill cops, burn churches, do drugs. And it's very transgressive art, very, very politically leftist, and very anti political correctness. And it's not in like, oh, cancer culture is a bad thing kind of way. That's not what it means at all. It means of being shocking to get people to pay attention to you.
The term crack rock steady. Do you know the story of the term crack rock steady and how this all comes about?
Oh yeah. So obviously it comes from the song Crack Rock Steady on Choking Victims of first album, seminal album, No Gods, No Managers.
Crack Rock Steady, are you ready to stop? The rotten blue men are just thinking of some God. Crack Rock Steady, are you ready? Living above the law.
And I was trying to think about this earlier today over, has there been kind of like a sub-genre of music that essentially branches off from one band? And the only other example I could think of, which is also in the punk realm, was D-Beat, which I believe it comes from Discharge. Am I correct on that? I'm not a big D-Beat person, but is it Discharge that was the first D-Beat band?
I don't know. Do you know that, Adam?
I mean, I don't know that, but I would go with that.
There's somebody listening right now that's screaming at all three of us.
Yeah, I'm sure.
To some degree, I think you could argue that ska core stemmed from the Boss Tones. I mean, they were using the term, but at the same time, I don't know that.
But at the same time, Operation Ivy was also doing the thing. So, like, there was multiple bands doing the same thing. And, like, the Crack Rock Steady, like, and every single band associated with Crack Rock Steady will not deny this. And that, like, oh yeah, we're all just imitating Choking Victim, Leftover Crack. We're imitating, we're doing our own spin on Choking Victim and Leftover Crack. There's zero bands involved in the scene that will deny that. I know, like, in Leftover Crack, so Choking Victim only had their one album, and then Leftover Crack, in like they opened up the album with the intro of like that crack rock steady beat still drums on. I'm probably screwing it up by a word or two, but that's in the opening. And like, cause they're kind of just like calling back to themselves, which is very much a thing in like old school reggae rock steady scenes, which they were very much pulling from. And that just was something that other bands latched on. And in terms of becoming a scene, like, I was actually trying to look into it today, and I think the first two other crack rock steady bands that were connected to Leftover Crack or Choking Victim, as in did not share any members with them, were No Cash from Pennsylvania and Team Spider from New York City. Nobody mentions Team Spider anymore these days. And both of those bands described themselves when they first came out as crack rock steady bands. And this was 99-2000.
Okay. So it's pretty early. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like from there, the other bands that came out started. And I made up a gigantic, gigantic long list of bands that describe themselves as crack rock steady that we can get into maybe at some point.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay, so the main primary band, as you said, Choking Victim and then Leftover Crack.
Yes.
Scott Sturgeon, SZA.
Oh, yes, the gigantic elephant in the room.
Let's address that, shall we? What is it? Okay, can you explain? So, I mean, he's had issues with cops and various other groups, but in recent years, I would say a lot of the progressive ska and punk fans have turned away from them, which is a different thing. Can you explain what the story is?
Oh, sure. And can be quite frank. Scott Sturgeon, a.k.a. SZA, while being a extremely talented and gifted artist, is also a junkie. Let's be straight up junkie who is abusive, manipulative, and a person who I've been told by many people that I have interacted with that have had direct dealings with him, that I've been warned not to have any dealings with him. He is a junkie. And the thing is, if you listen to Choking Victim and Leftover Crack or Star Fucking Hipsters or any project that SZA's been involved in, essentially half the songs is him telling you that he's an awful fucking human being. And it's not a joke. Like, he, from what I understand, he's an awful human being. The thing that is most known in the scene is he had a relationship with Whitney. Oh, I'm spacing on her last name. Whitney from Days and Days. And they got married. And that had a gigantic public disintegration with Whitney having accusations towards him of abuse, which, for the record, I 100% believe. I, though, in terms of what the exact details, I always like to point out to people that both people in this relationship are junkies. And I'm not sure how much interactions people have had with junkies. I have lived with junkies before. I've lived in a drug house before. Don't recommend it. Kids, don't do hard drugs. I don't recommend it. However, I 100% believe awful, awful, awful things happen. Whitney, I would also like to point out at this time, has also been kicked out of Days and Days due to their drug addiction. And Days and Days is now going on tours without Whitney. It's just a lot of very bad people doing bad things to each other. However, all that said, bad people can make good art, which I do think is what a lot of, in particular, Choking Victim, Leftover Crack is. And bad people can express their bad feelings in good art. And it's not encouragement to enjoy the art. I come from the horror scene. I'm primarily known as somebody that works in the horror industry. And so I deal with a lot of art that has a lot of vile subject matter. And I also really enjoy a lot of transgressive art. I'm actually currently right now rereading the Marquis de Sade's 120 Days of Sodom. I'm not fucking type of weirdo. And do I endorse the things that everybody that makes the art, do I endorse everything about their life? No. Can I think though that they make interesting statements and relate their own humanity, as objectionable as it may be, in interesting ways? And that I say very much yes.
Well, there's definitely a distinction between making vile subject matter that's vile and a person that's vile, I guess, you know. I think in a weird way, people feel a betrayal when the person, even when they make content that expresses vile things, is themselves abusive or does vile things that they object to. So I think, which I don't know that was like as much of a thing 20 years ago as it is now, but nowadays I'd say people feel much greater sense of betrayal by that and feel like you can't support them because of that. Like, that's too close. Yeah.
When it came out that SZA was a violent asshole, my response to that, to be honest, was kind of, well, yeah, have you not listened to his songs? He kind of expresses that a lot in his songs, which I actually view differently. And now, for anybody listening, if you disagree with me and you can't stand Choking Victim or Leftover Crack anymore because of SZA's actions to get made public, I 100% agree with you. I'm not going to make any disagreements. I totally understand. And once again, I am not in any way condoning his behavior at all. The acts that did hit me differently was the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones and Anti-Flag, which I felt very much betrayed. I felt more betrayed by them than I did SZA. SZA, I think, was always telling us publicly, I'm a piece of shit. Like, the quote I'm from one of his songs, addiction and depression is swimming in my cum. Like, that's one of the songs.
Yeah, my one interaction with SZA when I interviewed him for my book, which was before the Whitney stuff came out, was that we were interviewing in Sacramento, and he's like, I'm hungry. I said, there's a grocery store around the corner. He's like, let's go. And we're still kind of talking and interviewing, and it's one of those grocery stores, like a co-op. It's like Whole Foods, where they have the, like, you can kind of serve yourself the food and then you weigh it and pay for it. So he's just doing that. Then he just like walks out the door, doesn't pay. And then he looks at me and he goes, I know this isn't ska. And that was it. And then we just continued. Like, I don't know that he needed to steal the food. I don't know if he wanted to. I don't know. I don't even know what I have no idea why he stole, other than I guess that's what he does. He just does shit like that.
I mean, they have a song, Five Finger Discount. Open.
Yeah.
For any parents that are listening that want to steer their children away from pursuing a life in the arts, have them read Architects of Self-Destruction, The Oral History of Leftover Crack. It is, I've read a lot of books about bands. I have never read a bleaker or more upsetting book about a band ever. Because, like, normally the books about the bands, you know, like, you have, like, all the partying stories, and then they get into the dark times. There's no party stories. It's only dark times. From the very beginning to the very end of the book, it's only dark times. Like, some of the happiest times are them describing stories of pulling up to fast food restaurants and digging through the trash to eat trash out of a fast food restaurant. And this is like leftover crack at their height on tour. So parents, if you want to discourage your children from pursuing a life in the arts, buy them Architects of Self-Destruction. Going back to about being betrayed, because I'm like, I don't feel like leftover crack ever said anything they weren't. Like, they were always put themselves as forward, essentially, as, especially as SZA, as a bad person. But I would like to contrast it, and I don't know how you all feel. And also curious, like, listeners, like, for myself personally, I still, like, get down, love leftover crack, Choking Victim, but I can no longer listen to the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones or Anti-Flag. And I feel that in both those occasions, it was a way more gigantic portrayal of how they presented themselves artistically compared to how they turned out to be. Whereas SZA was always from the beginning, I'm a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, I think for me, Anti-Flag was a huge betrayal. I wasn't a big fan of them. I was kind of indifferent to them. But yeah, that to me is a hard no.
I'm from Pennsylvania. I started listening to them with a new kind of army. I was around in their early days. You have no idea how much that... And I stopped listening to them a decade ago. And you have still no idea how much that fucking hurt me.
With Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, I kind of feel like, I guess I feel like I'm okay with them historically and their catalog historically. And everyone in that band, everyone else in that band, shall we say, seems cool and awesome. And I celebrate them. And I feel like they deserve to have their history celebrated and everything that they did and they innovated and all their stories. My opinion on Dickie is that he just seems, I feel reluctant to call him a bad person. He just seems like he lost his mind a little, I guess. And I can't support him, but.
So everyone's on Dickie about the anti-vax shit, which is 100% true. Here's why I really fucking hate Dickie. And I feel super betrayed. And I have tried, so you know how he actually likes to argue with people on Twitter and Instagram? I've tried to get into arguments with him, and he won't respond to any of this with me. And so, Dickie, if you hear this, I want answers over this, is that at the anti-vax rally that Dickie hosted in Los Angeles, he introduced a person by the name of Ben Swan and called Ben Swan a great journalist. Ben Swan is an obscure right-wing person that is literally only known for being fired from a local television station for reporting on Pizzagate as fact. So, Dickie, did you endorse Pizzagate? Also, directly, another thing that he won't respond to is when the Defiant played one of those rallies, mm-hmm. whatever, like they say, like, oh, we're not Trump supporters, but we're playing right-wing rallies. They were let in directly with a video that was anti-trans. So Dickie Barrett is not only like anti-vax, he has also endorsed Pizzagate and has been introduced with anti-trans organizations. I am fucking pissed off. I am pissed off at him over this.
What you're saying, fair.
Yeah.
He was a huge proponent of RFK Jr., which is pretty messed up.
The Boss Tones used to be my very favorite band. However, like you said, just do not extend this to the rest of the band members. If you're like me and heartbroken over the Boss Tones, check out the Kilograms. Fucking great, Joe Gittleman. Super psyched.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Touring with Omnigon.
Yep. Way better than the Defiant. Way better than the Defiant.
Oh, God. Defiant's terrible. I'll just say that right there. I'll put that out there.
Yeah.
I did listen to the album. It's pretty bad.
Me too. I will say this. I listened to Joe Gittleman's solo album and the Kilograms, and I listened to the Defiant. Defiant, not good. All the Joe Gittleman stuff, good.
Yeah.
And that is not even as anything, nothing to do with how I think of them as people either.
Yep.
Back to Crack Rock Steady.
Yes.
So you talked about two bands that started to use the term Crack Rock Steady to self-identify. So in a way, we might even say like they solidified this as a genre, because like when a band self-identifies, it could just be silliness. But when other bands start to say, oh yeah, that's us too, we use that term too, that starts to create a culture of like, this is a thing, this is a genre, this is a movement.
And so, and it's kind of like super fascinating that like in, when I was trying to like research it and really pin it down, like I said, bands that weren't connected to Choking Victim or Leftover Crack. So of course there's Morning Glory, there's In Decay. We're not counting those bands. So we have Team Spider, which I basically never hear anybody ever mention, which is like a Crack Rock Steady punk ska style band based out of New York City. They were tied into the Choking Victim Leftover Crack crew because where their name came from, Team Spider, is they were, this is such a bizarre story. They were bicycle activists in New York City, as in, you know, like activists for trying to get more bicycle lanes and stuff like that going. And they would do protests where they would bicycle where there weren't supposed to be bicycles. And also, tangentially related, the person running this organization that also led the band would also essentially lead people into running into concerts without paying for the door fee, would call everything "Let's Go Team Spider." So this was kind of like this activist, weirdo, anarcho art activist thing, ska punk band. And then what made them really, really noteworthy is then they recruited an 80-year-old beat poet. So Team Spider is crack rock steady ska punk music with an 80-year-old beat poet doing spoken word poetry over top of it. So imagine Leftover Crack, and then for the breakdowns, there's an 80-year-old man doing beat poetry. And it's all highly, highly, highly political.
So for me, I don't know if Adam, if you're the same way, I'm definitely not like super knowledgeable on all the thousands of bands that play this style or have played this style. I like the Choking Victim LP. And to me, this is like, in my personal opinion, this is the height of this style of music, is that record. Like I've never heard the music done better than No Gods, No Manager. Or is that the name, right?
Yeah, No Gods, No Managers, correct.
Yeah, I've never heard it done better. Adam, what do you think about it?
I mean, one of the main trappings I seem to notice of a lot of these type of bands is, you know, low budget, no budget recording. So everything kind of sounds not great, or sometimes is intentionally sounds not great. And all the bands usually seem to exist for a single EP or album and then break up, usually under kind of crazy circumstances where members hate each other. Or, I mean, that's just been my viewpoint on it. I mean, some of the stuff I find interesting.
As a super fan, that is all correct.
Okay. one of the bands that I think I've heard that I liked was called Leper.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great.
As I understand, they don't really have much of a presence online. They put out one record, as far as I know. Don't play shows, aren't playing music anymore.
Jeff, do you agree with me that No Gods, No Managers is the best recording of Crack Rock Steady, or would you argue that there's
no
better versions of it out there?
Yeah, I explicitly would argue there is actually a band that is better than Leftover Crack at their own style.
Okay,
let's hear who is this?
Do we want to talk about No Cash real quick, or do we want to go to that?
talk about No Cash, and then let's talk about who you think is better than Choking Victim, Leftover Craft. Yeah.
So we're talking about like Crack Rock Steady as a brand. So we got like that activist band, Team Spider, which, by the way, anyone listening, look up Team Spider. It is such an extremely weird artistic punk ska artifact. The band no longer exists. The 80-year-old beat poet, unfortunately, he died. I don't know if it's still on their website, but I actually kind of wrote like a tribute to him that the band had on their front page of their website for a long period of time. I actually booked them and they played in my small middle of nowhere town, Pennsylvania, that they came down from New York City. And they played, and the guy, the activist guy, actually adopted a kitten from one of my friends when they came. They took a kitten back with them, and they had that cat for years and years. But No Cash, Pennsylvania, the other side, No Cash was just a bunch of high school teenagers that kind of like were straight up like, Choking Victim is the coolest band ever. Leftover Crack is the coolest band ever. We want to be them. We're just gonna straight up be them. And they recorded, actually they did a split album with Team Spider. And like I said, like everyone, like people, super punk nerds know No Cash, but everyone seems to have forgotten about Team Spider. But they did a split album together, and then No Cash did a, album, which, oh my God, I can't believe I'm spacing on it. I have it pulled up right here. Or Run Your Pockets, and which is a fantastic Crack Rock Steady album, which SZA produced. And No Cash called themselves Crack Rock Steady. And that's kind of where it all started. Also, brag time, I got to see No Cash actually open for the Pie Tasters in the Basement show in Baltimore. That's one of my big... It's one of my big punk rock brags.
Boom.
One of the other big, I feel like trappings of Crack Rock Steady is, like self-referencing, where it's, like a lot of bands will be named after song titles or album titles. Like there's a Bay Area band called Run Your Pockets.
And, there's a great Idaho band called 40 Ounces, which is a reference to the Leftover Crack song. In fact, I have pulled up in my list of bands. There's also Five Finger Discount. There's a number of bands that directly reference Leftover Crack, Choking Victim song titles or lyrics.
Do we consider Low Cash Ninjas to be Crack Rock Steady?
I absolutely would.
And that's probably the only, other than Brad Logan from Leftover Crack and the author of Architects of Self-Destruction. Yeah. Yep. That's the only other instance of us having a Crack Rock Steady musician on this podcast, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been, yeah, one of your biggest beefs with me.
Yeah, I've been encouraging you to have more. You need to have Chet Nelbill on. You need to have MC Devlin on. Those are the two big. Oh no, you need to have Squirt on. Those are the three. Those are the three you need to have on.
So MC Devlin, he came from No Cash, right?
Yes, yes.
And then MC Devlin kind of went in a different direction, like kind of rap, ska, reggae. Yeah.
Yes. So No Cash, which was a straight up Choking Victim, Leftover Crack, ripoff band. For anyone that's heard that band, most people's favorite song by them, myself included, is Gasoline. No cash, you don't want to fuck with me at first. We're just like birds in the third degree. With the strike of a match in the gasoline. Top pills, drugs kill birds, worth the thrill. It's kind of this weird, crusty punk ska hip hop song, and the band broke up, and the lead singer MC Devlin went on to form a hip hop project, a very experimental hip hop project with a music producer and called Mad Conductor. And if you're curious to what the second No Cash album would have sounded like, listen to the first Mad Conductor release, because that's what the songs were, and just imagine a crusty ska punk band playing them, and that's what caused the band to break up.
I like Mad Conductor, by the way. I think they're a good band.
I think Mad Conductor is actually one of the greatest bands to ever exist that never got any success they deserved. Like, I can't think of a band that was better that never got their success.
What's so compelling to you about them?
It is such a mishmash of genres and artistic ideas, and it is done in such a unique fashion and so catchy and so danceable. And it's something, so it's like pulling a little bit from like the ska punk scene, from like the techno pop dance scene, from a little bit of just like psychedelic rock. So it's like great music that it's great music that you can play for your girlfriend that's also part of the scene, and she's not going to feel alienated by.
Okay.
We'll be right back after this.
Okay, so back to this question. You say No Gods, No Managers is not the height of Crack Rock Steady. So correct. Which bands have outdone Choking Victim / Leftover Crack, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it is the Stupid, Stupid Henchmen. I do believe the Stupid Stupid Henchmen is the best Crack Rock Steady band out there, which it's a two-person project from Chet Nebel and T.C. Connell. If I mispronounce one of your names, the both of you, I apologize. But it's a mostly in-the-studio project. They occasionally do live shows, very rarely. I've never seen them live. God damn it, I want to see them live. But they did a number of releases and essentially started as a, you know, bedroom band project, and kind of have moved on into a fully formed studio project. I highly recommend starting with their albums, Car Bombs Are Cool and Charmingly Demonic. However, I do think their absolute best is they did an album in, I want to say it was 2021 or 2022, called Whatever Helps Get You Through, which is a Crack Rock Steady album essentially about going through the pandemic and shutdown. And not only do I think it's the best Crack Rock Steady album out there, it's also the best album I've heard of artistically expressing what life was like during the pandemic, with the shutdowns going on, with the riots going on, protests. It just kind of really captured that time.
Now, I've listened to Stupid Stupid Henchmen. I couldn't get past the drum machine. Do they have recordings without the drum machine?
No, they do not. They only use drum machines. In fact, they do live shows with a drum machine.
I want to interject something about Stupid Stupid Henchmen, and that is that I did a podcast once where they were also on it, and one of the members, I think it was when we were off air, was like, "Hey, Aaron, I've been reading your book, and that's really cool that you mentioned Jeff Burke. I love that guy. We're in his book." So you mentioned them in Shatner Quake?
I mentioned them in book Cripple Wolf, and
okay.
That there is a fake punk band I make up called Mouthful of Spiders, and they go on tour with the Stupid Stupid Henchmen. And also, right. Chet Nelbill, who's kind of the mastermind, who you just mentioned, of the Stupid Stupid Henchmen, His day job is he's a animator, and for like nerds like Weirdo Art, he was actually the head animator of the first season of the Adult Swim show Super Jail, and he was also the head animator of both seasons of the TV show Ugly Americans. Both are great, great cartoon shows, but yeah, so he's like an animator, and then on his off time, he does this weird Croc Rock City band.
So if I was to ask you, you know, what in your opinion are the top five like Croc Rock City bands? Do you have that like ready to go?
I absolutely do. Are we including if like leftover crack?
You can include leftover crack or any of those. Yeah, yeah. Because I'm curious how you rank them.
Well, actually, I'm not gonna, because everyone talks about leftover crack and choking victim. I don't need to give them any more press. Stupid henchmen, obviously. I'd also like to point out, in terms of that leftover crack, choking victim family band that is not nearly as problematic, Public Serpents, which is Squirt, who is the drummer of Choking Victim, his current band. And in fact, he's actually the guy who wrote the Crack Rock City song. And you know, like the reggae vocals in Crack Rock City, mm-hmm. That's Squirt. And also, if you see Public Serpents live, he does Crack Rock City live. But Public Serpents, fucking awesome band. It's the Choking Victim leftover crack sound with a little bit of some electronic elements added to it.
Squirt famously, the demise of Choking Victim, I think, had to do with Squirt and Stizza getting into a fist fight.
Yes.
While they were recording the record, which led them to breaking up before they finished recording the record.
According to the book, Architects of Self-Destruction, has interviews with both of them, they both say the exact same thing, that they got into a fist fight on a park bench, if I recall correctly, and that's what led to the breakup of Choking Victim.
I once posted about Public Serpents, and I had an angry comment about them being like, fuck this band, they are always drinking and driving on tour. And that's not cool. So,
I mean, I can't comment on that. And I've already brought up all these bands already say they're scummy people. So if you're surprised, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. So anyways, okay. We got stupid henchmen, Public Serpents. What else you got?
Bang Bang Cocktail. And it's spelled B-E-N-G Cocktail is normal. They're a band from France. They're an acoustic crack rock study band. And as I introduced one of my friends to them, as they described it to me, which I think is perfect, is this is the music that will be played in the street when the revolution comes. It is highly aggressive, highly political, acoustic guitar bass music, essentially about the destruction of capitalism and how everybody's going to die. I cannot recommend it enough. They're weirdly, with like folk punk becoming so popular, Bang Bang Cocktail just like never took off. Here, I have my lips right here. And another one, tangentially related. So this is a thing that, Aaron, you and I have talked about. We talked about this in Portland, that there's also like the Croc Rock City scene. Not all the bands sound exactly like Choking Victim, Leftover Crack. Like Mad Conductor really sounds nothing like them.
But they're kind of included in the scene just because of the no cash route. If like Mad Conductor started as Mad Conductor, I don't think they would be included as part of that scene, right?
You're entirely correct. And there's also a lot of like the same like attitude and just like all the same kind of like connections. And a band I'd say it was related to that is, I believe I already mentioned them earlier, the best ska band that never really got their due, Night Gaunts. Do either one of you know Night Gaunts?
Yeah. That's Paul the Kid's old band.
Yes! Oh my... That almost like hurts me hearing you describe it as Paul the Kid's old band, because to me, I'm like, oh, Paul the Kid is the Night Gaunts guy's new project. Night Gaunts, in my opinion, was the best ska band of the dead period of ska in the 2000s that just never got their due.
And this is they're from Australia, right?
New Zealand.
New Zealand. Okay.
They're from New Zealand. They yelled at me once over that confusion. in fact, I booked them on their first U.S. tour. I booked their Portland spot where I had a legit full-on circus freak show open for them. So if you watch the Night Gaunts video for Money, Money, Money on the U.S. tour and they show the Portland stop and there's clowns dancing around, it's because there was actually a clown sideshow that opened for them. I booked that. But they were completely tied into the crack rock scene just because they loved it, and they shared a lot of like the DIY aspects, the political aspects, and a lot of the crack rock city people is what set up their tours in the United States, which also led to them making connections with Days and Days, which they did a split LP, and they later did a tour of Days and Days. But I'd still say Night Gaunts, tangentially related to the crack rock study scene, definitely included. And then, so that's 4, 5. And I've got a bizarre one here for 5. Have you ever heard of From the Cradle to the Rave?
No, I haven't. Have you, Adam?
Can't say I have. Nope.
All right.
Hardcore techno, crack rock, dubstep. Like, it is. That's exactly what it is. It is one of the most insane bands I've ever heard. It's an all-electronic band. It is a crack rock steady band. They are absolutely trying to sound like crack rock steady. And they all techno, combining it all with dance music. The two guys that were behind it actually have now moved on to become a very popular group in the UK dance scene or techno scene. I'm sorry, I don't know anything about electronic music, but all the UK listeners right now are probably going to be like, oh, holy shit. They are now known as Capital 1212, and they're a pretty big name in the UK dancing. In fact, I just want to verify that I got that name right. Yep, Capital 1212. But they originally started out as From the Cradle to the Rave as a techno crack rock steady band. And they only did one album, but the one album is so fucking sweet. It is so awesome. It goes so fucking hard. You gotta check it out. If you want to hear some of the weirdest ska ever, go check that out.
So, two questions about this. And these are your opinion, obviously. Is it possible to be a crack rock city band and to not be overtly and intensely political?
Yes, but if you're not going to be overtly political, you have to be overtly personal, because I would point to like Morning Glory, which is kind of like a branch off of Leftover Crack. And yes, absolutely, Morning Glory is political, but Morning Glory is overtly just songs about being fucking depressed, hating yourself, and wanting to kill yourself. And a lot of the bands, we haven't really gotten into this, but that's actually kind of like one of the conceptual things that a lot of the bands artistically really bring forward is feelings of personal self-doubt and doing it really in extreme ways. Some people may say that it's like suicidal ideation. Like that is a critique I have seen of crack rock study bands. as someone that enjoys a lot of music, I'd say it's, and sometimes has dark, intrusive thoughts, I'd say it's more like, no, it's just artistically expressing what we feel. So if it's not being very political, it's being very personal. So, like, yes, absolutely, you will occasionally get, like, a band, they'll have their one-off song, like, Super Stupid Henchmen in one of their songs has a recipe for making pumpkin pie. So, like, absolutely, there's always little jokey things. But the band as a whole, it's very much about expressing what people are upset about, what upsets you. I think that's actually very much the focal point there, what upsets you.
Now, I don't know if people are going to scream at their car stereo at me for asking this, but it seems like, you know, not just Left Ear Crack and Choking Victim, but it seems like, okay, maybe we can expect that we're not dealing with, like, always the best people in this genre. Is that true? Do you feel like, or do you feel like, oh, there's tons of great, like, really, really good people in this genre?
Oh, SZA unfortunately gave a fucking bad name for everybody. And that's what's, like, really shitty about the whole fucking thing with SZA. I'm going to curse a whole bunch right now because you're going to hear my real opinions. Like, he gave such a fucking bad name for, there was, like, so many bands, so many people, like, and small artists. And I helped out in small ways of, like, booking shows, promotions, things like that. All these great people, and we're in a niche of a niche of a niche. Like, you know, like how much more, like, irrelevant could we get? And the one fucking big figure we have, the one fucking group that makes it big, fucking Choking Victim, Left Over Crack, and the main figure has to go and ruin it all for everybody and then make everybody side-eye. And when I say about, like, embracing, I talked about it earlier, embracing the negative things. And that's what's supposed to be, that we're bringing out our negative sides in our art, not in real life. That we're not hurting somebody in real life. You can hurt as many people as you want in art. Be as vile as you want to be in art. I love that shit. I love that shit. I don't like it in real life. And fuck SZA, that he put a dark shadow over all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, though, at the very beginning, I still think he's a great artist.
Now, something, I don't know if you know anything about this or heard about this. I talked to an anonymous source. They didn't want their name public, that said that currently Left Over Crack and other SZA bands are, you know, they're having a hard time being booked these days because of people's feelings towards them. So they're kind of doing this whole thing where they're booking shows last second, like, you know, a month out or a little less. And they're dealing with, like, first time, like, promoters who don't know much or aren't really, you know, really in tune with stuff, because they're kind of concerned about shows getting shut down or canceled. So they're kind of operating in this weird, bizarre world of, like, trying to outrun. I don't know, I guess. Have you heard anything about this before?
Well, I haven't heard anything, but I can say that I did go to when what's currently Left Over Crack, they did a brief run of shows on the West Coast as kind of like a warm-up, and I went to the one in Portland, and it was one of the strangest shows I went to. No punk venue in Portland would have them.
Mm-hmm.
Though they actually came back since, and they played Dante's in Portland, which is a major punk venue. So I guess things have changed. But when I went, it was a very strange show because it was at a dance club that is primarily known for hosting the after-hours parties of hip-hop shows. And Left Over Crack was playing at, and it's also the first punk show that I've ever been to in which going in, I got patted down by security that literally had guns. And I posted this on my Instagram. So if anyone's doubting me on this, I posted pictures of the security on my Instagram. Look me up on Instagram, you can see it. And I was overhearing them. Apparently, they were trying to do a sting operation for somebody specifically that they were trying to catch. I am being completely serious about all this. I am not exaggerating or making any of this up. And then they did the show in Portland. It was a venue that could probably hold around 1,000 people. And there was around 100, 200 people there. It was very empty. Stizza got angry and yelled at the guy running sound and ran off stage. And then he got back on stage. It was kind of a shit show. Though I will say this, I saw Leftover Crack several times back in their heyday when it was all of the members, you know, when Brad Logan was a part of it, when Ezra was there, when Alec was still alive. I saw them many times, and they were one of my all-time favorite live bands. Like, they put on such a great show. And once again, like, Stizza unfortunately overshadows how great all the other people were. Because all the things we hear SZA, all the other people all had their problems. And Squirt, like, once again, I need to, like, shout out Public Serpents again. Everyone, listen to Public Serpents. And Squirt's actually very much on social media, very openly talking about how he's trying to become a better person and the developments in his life and how he's a different person than he was when he was in Choking Victim, but still playing the same music.
So last question for this conversation is, where do you see the genre currently? Are there like bands coming up or playing that you like feel like are really making waves? Or does it feel like we're at a down phase of it?
Well, I think the political aspect of it pretty much got like absorbed by the greater ska scene, which I think is fucking awesome. Like the Bad Time Records bands, like how political pretty much all of them are, and playing in a poppier style of ska, but having more like anarcho perspectives is something that before you didn't really see. And that becoming more mainstream in the ska scene is so fantastic. In terms of like the actual bands playing it right now, once again, I have already sung the praises of Public Serpents and the Stupid Stupid Henchmen a bunch of times here, but I also want to shout out, like, there's not many bands playing the style. Like, as we said, it's a niche of a niche, and for bands that are currently playing it and that are currently doing live shows, I was reaching out and feeling out on social media. And so we have like the Public Serpents, the Stupid Stupid Henchmen. Also the Upfucks, gotta give them a shout out, which at one point was Squirt's live band for Public Serpents. And they kind of broke apart. They're all still friends, but they formed their own thing. And they're the Upfucks. And they do, if you want also a Choking Victim fix, check them out. There's also Anti-Venom from Mexico, which I adore. And they are like crack rock steady with a little bit of electronic aspects mixed into them. Big Brother and Filthy Radicals are in the UK. There's Corrupt Vision, Police, and Ill-Gotten Gains. Like, there's only a couple bands that are really active. And like, in terms of active bands, I do believe I've listed pretty much all of them.
It's Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever.
Hey, Aaron, I think this is going to end up being a divisive episode. I think there's going to be some people who are going to like take issue. Because that seems to be another defining factor of Crack Rock Steady, are their fans. So I'm just going to say it right now. Don't at me.
Don't at me. But you can sign up to the Patreon and send us a direct message. Yeah.
Yeah. $5. You can bug me all you want. But until you pay that $5, keep that shit at home. Hey, folks. Once a month, our Patreon subscribers get a brand new bonus episode. These bonus episodes are completely different from our usual content. Here's a sample of the conversation we have waiting for you on our Patreon this month.
So over the life of the podcast, who continues to be like any white whales that you haven't gotten a chance to talk to yet, or maybe somebody that turned you down that you really wish they said yes?
I don't really get turned down so much as no replies. I honestly would still love to get anyone from No Doubt to come on the podcast. I've actually really been after Eric Stefani. That's kind of like, that's the member I'd really like, because he was the one that started the band. He was the one that envisioned the band, and he was pretty much the leader of the band up until the point he quit, which was partway through Tragic Kingdom. And he was the ska guy. You know, he was all about ska. So he's a big one. Eric Andre. Why not Eric Idle? I don't know. Let's have him come on too.
To get access to this episode and all of our exclusive backer content, go sign up for our Patreon today. That's patreon.com/indefenseofska. Ska now, more than ever.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.